Today I'll be telling you about our high-performance computing platform, SEND. And this is joint work with my colleagues at Nokia Bell Labs in Stuttgart, as well as in Naperville in Illinois. So you have seen a couple of serverless computing talks, I assume, but I'll just give you a brief overview of how function as a service, or also known as serverless computing, actually works. So we have the developer, we have the platform. The developer basically just writes their application logic in individual functions. These individual functions are uploaded to the platform, and the developer also defines a set of conditions or events so that whenever such events occur, the platform will basically create a function execution instance to handle that event and then produce a result. Now, one thing to mention here is that is quite important is that whenever there are more requests, then the platform operator will basically just take the responsibility of monitoring the frequency of those events and creating enough instances to actually meet that demand. So the developer doesn't have to worry about monitoring the application or function load and doesn't have to worry about that, basically. And then when these executions finish, they will produce some results, and these results can either be stored on some storage service, or they can actually themselves become triggers to execute individual other functions. To recap what I just said, is essentially you can summarize the promise of serverless computing in three simple statements. The developers don't have to manage any servers, they don't have to deal with operating systems, they don't have to deal with any of these dependencies. The platform operator will promise to basically create enough function instances to handle all the demand, and that will give the developers this continuous scaling property that they are hungry for. And as a result, what's left for the developer, if they are not monitoring the load, if they are not managing any servers, they can just focus on their application code, they can innovate faster, they can basically create new features faster, and then they can go to market faster. Right? This is great from the developer's point of view. And as a developer, you would basically want to sort of take advantage of this to the fullest, so you would create applications that are consisting of several functions. Right? And this is what we did. This is essentially an application, an image processing pipeline that is consisting of four functions. We have, as you can see, four functions. We have an input, it's an image. The image will be given to this workflow. The very first function is going to extract some metadata out of this. It's going to pass it along to the second function. The second function is going to modify this metadata. It's going to process it. It's going to pass it along to the next function. That next function is going to look for it using some sort of an object recognition library, in this case, MXNet. It's going to recognize the objects that are found in this image. And finally, the fourth function is going to resize this image, store the metadata, found objects, as well as whatever information that needs to be saved in some storage service. So that's great. So we took this image processing pipeline. We ran it on two commercial systems, Amazon Step Functions using Lambda, as well as IBM Cloud Functions. We have also sort of took the open source version of the IBM Cloud Functions, which is open sourced as Apache OpenVisc, and ran it on a local cluster. And this is what we found. So as you can see, the total runtime of this image processing pipeline is not bad. It's on the order of a couple of seconds. Well, in this case, less than 1.5 seconds. However, if you look closely, the total execution time, the total execution time of these functions is actually this much. So in this maroon column in the figure, you can see that is actually substantially lower than the total runtime. And this difference is essentially the overhead that these platforms are actually imposing. Now, this kind of overhead is not only bad for the applications, because at the end of the day, the total runtime may be important for the applications, and you want to reduce that. And from the developer's point of view, that's important. But from the provider's point of view, if you have so much overhead, then you are becoming resource inefficient, and that is something that you want to avoid. And this brings us to our system. We propose SEND. It's a high-performance serverless computing platform. And we have two goals in general. We want to reduce the latency for the applications, and we want to utilize the resources as efficiently as possible for the cloud, or platform operators. Next, I will give a brief overview of existing platforms. Then I will be talking about some common practices that we have found in these existing platforms and what those imply. So many of the existing platforms have basically a set of hosts, and they are connected to some sort of a distributed message bus. This can also be a distributed storage service. And whenever there are functions, they are isolated using containers. So if you upload a function code, that function code is going to be running in a function container. And these containers are going to be deployed wherever there are resources. So in this case, the green container may actually end up on host one. The blue container, because there are resources available on host one, it's going to be also deployed there. And these guys are going to handle the requests, and then they're going to stay running. And they're going to stay deployed until a certain timeout event happens. And when these functions want to actually interact with each other, say because they are part of an application workflow, then they're going to do this through this distributed message bus or through this distributed storage service. So these are the common practices that we have found. So what are the implications of that? As I mentioned, most of these functions, or most of these services, are utilizing containers to isolate functions. And that has some implications on the function execution, as well as how these systems actually handle concurrency. So you can be truly on demand, and whenever there's a new request, you can basically start a new container from scratch. This is known as a cold start, because you have to initialize the container from scratch. This inevitably basically incurs long startup latency. Of course, you can be a little more clever than that, and then you can basically say that, hey, I launched this container, I might as well just keep it running. You can reuse those idle containers, and this is the warm start practice. Whenever there are requests available, then you can basically just redirect them to these warm containers. However, this is not a perfect solution, because if you have concurrency, then you have two choices. You can basically say that, hey, I'm going to basically either queue all these requests that are coming concurrently so that I will find some warm container available at some point, or you can basically just go ahead, okay, I'm not going to do that. I'm just going to start a new container for every concurrent request. Now, if you do these things, what ends up happening is that in order to supply high application performance that are consisting of several functions, you either have to keep all those function containers warm, which will lead to resource inefficiency, or you're going to have to make the applications pay for that latency penalty. Right? And the third common practice that we have found is that, you know, whenever these guys need to talk to each other, whenever these guys need to interact with each other, they have to go through the distributed message bus. And when that happens, the latency in between these functions, which we call the function interaction latency, is going to be long. Now, that said, let's talk about SAN's key ideas. We have two key ideas, and I'm going to tell you about both of these. Let's start with the application sandboxing. So what does that mean? So when we are talking about function as a service, we are talking about individual functions, and this works great if you have simple functions that are sort of doing a single task. But when you're talking about creating more complicated, more sophisticated applications that are consisting of functions, then you are introducing a new concept to the game. And that is basically the concept of an application. Now, what we are saying is, if we have these two different concepts, maybe we should have also different isolation levels. And in this particular case, we are referring to fault isolation. What we are saying is that if there are two users, if there are two applications, then they should be separated from each other using stronger mechanisms. However, if there is an application that is consisting of several functions, maybe there is no need to actually separate these functions from each other so strongly. And this is basically what we are doing. In a given host, we are going to put these applications in separate containers. So application one and application two here is going to run in their own containers. We are going to group the functions that belong to these applications, and then these functions are going to be running as separate processes in the same container. So here I'm zooming in into application one, where there are two functions, green and the blue function. And then these are going to be running in the same container. And whenever there are new requests for these functions, what we are going to do is basically just fork this process and create a new forked instance. And we're going to be doing this for every request. Now, this gives us three advantages in general. Well, first of all, forking is quite fast. So that allows us to create function execution instances in a very fast manner. We are going to have a low execution footprint because the function that we load at the very beginning is going to load all the libraries that that function is going to require. And whenever we fork, we can reuse the mechanisms that OS provides to us, such as copy and write memory access. And we can basically increase our memory footprint in very small increments. And the OS also provides us this ability where whenever these forked processes finish handling a request, they're going to basically just terminate, and the OS is going to reallocate the memory, deallocate the resources that were assigned to these processes. Okay, let's talk about the second key idea, which is hierarchical message queuing. And I should also mention that this principle of using a hierarchy is also applicable to the storage service. If you recall, if we have these two functions that are, let's say, residing on this particular host, if they need to be talking to each other, if they need to trigger each other, they have to do this through the distributed message bus, which obviously seems very inefficient because now you go all the way to the distributed message bus only to come back to the same host, right? And our insight here is that, okay, why don't we exploit locality for these kinds of functions that are going to be interacting with each other? And this kind of interaction happens naturally if you have an application. So what we are going to do is basically create shortcuts for interacting functions that belong to the same application. And how do we do that? So first, we are still going to keep this distributed message bus. Now it's going to be renamed to a global message bus in our terminology. What we are going to do is, though, we're going to run a local message bus on every host, right? And whenever there are functions that need to be interacting with each other on this host, they're going to use the local message bus instead of going all the way to the global message bus. And when this happens, after this happens, we are going to, at the host, we are going to coordinate the local bus with the global message bus. I'm not going to be talking about the details of this coordination. The details are in the paper. And this gives us two advantages. We can now create these low function interaction latencies, because at the end of the day, accessing the local message bus is faster than accessing the global message bus. And we can also have some fault tolerance because the global message bus is going to act like a backup through our coordination mechanism for these local message bus. And if we want to sort of exploit parallelism, where we need to sort of create requests for the same function in different hosts, then we can also utilize the global message bus. And those are the advantages. So to give you a summary about that, I basically showed you these three figures. The first one was referring to long function startup. The second one was referring to resource inefficiency. And the third one was basically long function interaction latencies. And with our application level sandboxing, we essentially address these two problems, the long startup and the resource inefficiency. And with the hierarchical message queuing, we are essentially addressing the shortcuts. We are creating these shortcuts for interacting functions. That said, let's talk about this image processing application and how that fares in SAND. And then I will tell you about other experiments that we have conducted. So this is essentially the overhead comparison. I don't know if you can see the overhead, especially from behind, but it's right there. And the total runtime, according to this, is reduced by 43% compared to, I believe, Apache OpenVSC. Yeah. And just to give you a quick idea on how much of these ideas contribute to the reduction of this overhead, as expected, accessing the local message bus is 3 to 5 times faster than accessing the global message bus. This is essentially conducted in an experiment where you have a producer-consumer type situation. And at the producer, you take a timestamp when you sent a message. And at the receiver, You basically take another timestamp when you receive the message, and then you take the time difference. And because these are running on the same hosts, we can basically assume that the timestamps are sort of consistent. Now, what we have also looked at is the message, the function interaction latencies. And the function interaction latencies are defined as follows. You take a timestamp at the end of the first function, and you take another timestamp at the very beginning of the next function. And the difference is essentially your function interaction latency. And we found that SAND is 8 times faster than OpenVSC, and it is 3.5 times faster than Apache AWS Greengrass. I also would like to sort of give a quick overview of the idle memory cost and the trade-off that is happening with latency. Now, in order to understand that these timeouts, as I mentioned, this cold versus warm container practice, it is not easy to determine these timeouts. In order to sort of explore how easy it is to actually fine-tune these timeout value to any given workload, we basically created some 5 synthetic workloads. Every one of these workloads is basically using different burst parameters, meaning their burst rate is higher, the burst frequency is different, the burst duration is different. And the idle memory cost is basically, what we define it is as the product of assigned memory, assigned but unused memory, and the duration of that assignment. And we did this with OpenVSC, where we could basically modify the timeout value. And here I'm showing 2 of those workloads. As you can see, the idle memory cost obviously depends on the workload. Apache OpenVSC by default uses a timeout value of 10 minutes, and that is 600 seconds. And as you can see, if you have a longer timeout value, then your idle memory cost is going to be high. Of course, you can basically say that, hey, I don't want this idle memory cost, I'm gonna reduce that timeout value. And you can do that, and we did that too. And what we have seen is that if you have, for instance, a 1 second timeout value, your idle memory cost is going to be very low, but then you're gonna be paying the penalty of having to start cold containers all the time. And in our experiments, we ended up basically, in these workloads, we have seen that 18 to 33% of those calls actually ended up starting a new cold container and experiencing high latencies. And we have run the same workloads on SAND, and we have seen that SAND is essentially those flat lines here. As you can see, SAND's idle memory cost is more or less constant, and the same is true also for the latency. And according to this, according to all these different workloads, SAND is reducing the idle memory cost up to 2 orders of magnitude, according to the workload that you pick, without sacrificing any latency penalties. Without sacrificing the latency. So in this talk, I basically describe to you our high-performance serverless computing platform. In SAND, we have fast function invocation. We have increased resource efficiency, and we have short function interaction latencies. And we were able to achieve these features by utilizing these 2 key ideas, application-level sandboxing and hierarchical message queuing. We are working on an invite-only beta that's going to be hopefully available within the next couple of weeks. So if you're interested, if you have specific applications in mind that you would like to test out, please get in touch with me, and we'll arrange something. Thank you.
Thank you. For questions, you can come up to the mic.
Saurabh Bakshi from Purdue. So I had a question regarding the context for this. So for the serverless applications, is it common to have multiple functions within one, or is it more common to have a single function within the application?
I think when the first serverless computing platforms came into existing, they had this notion of simple tasks that need to be executed once and then be done, and then whenever there are new requests, they need to be executed again. But I believe the properties that serverless computing provides to the developers is so big that the developers have started actually developing complex applications. where they were going very creative to sort of chain these functions together in various ways. And for instance, Amazon actually noticed that this was the trend, and they have sort of created another product which they call the step functions, where they actually give the developers the ability to create more structured workflows.
Okay. Yeah. So the follow-up is you have different processes which run within the same container.
Correct.
Right? Doesn't it violate the common or the recommended practice of having a single process per container?
A single process per?
Per container.
Well, this is the trade-off that we are making. So we are saying that if you want to do that function, one function per one container, then if you have complex applications that consist of several functions, then you're going to pay the penalty. And we are revisiting that assumption, or the common practice, if you will, and saying that maybe this is not necessary because these functions are going to be functioning as a unit. They belong to the same application. So maybe that is not necessary. If I have several functions that belong to my application, there is no point of isolating them from each other as if they were yours. Okay. Right.
Hi, I'm Nikros Kornek. And you have an application that is an image processing application.
Correct.
Do you have an idea of how much is the overhead of running it as a step functions when compared to just having a monolithic binary that will do the same function? In the sense that you reduce overheads, but there still remain context switches and many overheads everywhere. So how far are you from the optimal?
Okay, so the left columns are showing the total runtime of this image processing pipeline using AWS step functions.
Yeah, but basically the compute time is different because you just have function call that you wouldn't have if it was all compiled into a single binary. And
right. Maybe I should answer it this way. If you have these overheads in between function calls, as a developer, you are going to be inclined to say that, well, okay, I don't want to pay that penalty. I'm just going to put all these four functions into one single function. In a sense, I'm going to create some spaghetti code.
The compiler will do it for you.
Sure. Okay. But then you will be losing the benefits of serverless computing, because then you are not going to be as modular as you were before. And you are also taking away the ability from the platform operators. If some of these functions receive, let's say, more load than others, then now you're trying to sort of create instances of that bloated function, even though you could have created smaller instances of that individual function.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.